against the storm of time. The sooner we start, the better. We are going to receive two presentations, COGTA and DBSA. And then we'll start with COGTA, so that they are able to attend to a 11 o'clock event that they have. Just for introduction, I know from time to time we see new faces. My name is Matomi Humphrey Mohobi, Chairperson of Select Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. I would request the honorable members to introduce themselves. Before you do that, let me welcome politically the Deputy Minister, who doesn't need introduction. He's with us here, and they've requested that 11 o'clock they have a mega event that they attended.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. My name is Chetan Mofuke. I am the member of the committee.
Good morning. Tunga Matila, a member of the committee. Good morning, John Gunda, a member of this committee.
Morning. Emmanuel Makuvela, a member of the committee.
I'm Theo Bielefeld, I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Dumin Keti, Department of Traditional Affairs.
Good morning. I'm Masenja Nasubanda of Department of Traditional Affairs.
Good morning. I'm Alva Africa. I'm the head of the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Avina Ramadie, Department of Cooperative Governance.
Kennedy Sebeho, Cooperative Governance.
I don't know whether it's the far right, the far east, or the far west.
Mark Selly from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Last Madranika, working for Saoga.
Good morning, my name is Bradley Fulian. I'm a support staff committee section.
Thank you very much. We welcome the Deputy Minister, the Department, to our delegation. Without hesitation, allow the Deputy Minister to, in a way of leading, just give an overview of what we expect.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. We want to thank you for affording us the opportunity to present our site plan and budget to you. We think it's a very important, perhaps one of the most important, if not the most important part of the calendar year in our engagement with the committee. In fact, we think what happens in the House is less significant than what happens in the committee when it comes to the budget, as my ex-comrade Dennis Bloom will confirm. Although if he was still in the party he was in, we wouldn't have allowed that chairperson coming so late. But you can see where his party is. I'm not sure he even knows which part of the party he's in and which office he has to go to and whether he still has an office. I think it's that it's very understandable. By that standard, he's quite early. But that's teasing you, of course. Let's come to the broad text, which is that we think that the NCOP and the NA are equivalent committees. They're complementary. They have the same status. They have different roles. So in what the chairperson said to you, please do not misunderstand. It's unfortunate that this sitting coincided with our budget vote, and also we have an acting minister who obviously is new to the portfolio, so various of us, the DGs and myself and others here, have to assist today. We also have a press conference at 11 o'clock to deal with our budget vote, which DCIS has facilitated. So for all those reasons, regrettably, we can't be here. I have communicated to the chairperson last night and this morning by phone in this regard, as is in fact as the DG. The DG of Traditional Affairs has been just called in by the minister right now, and he'll be here shortly. So he's just attending to a matter related to our budget vote this afternoon. So hopefully next year we will try to ensure that the sitting doesn't coincide with the budget vote in the National Assembly. So, but this year has been especially difficult because of the elections and the period that we had to be away, all parties in campaigning for that. Which brings me to my main point, which is that we think as COGTA that these elections were remarkable. The fact that 57% of the people voted who were registered, as against the target of 40% that the IEC had itself, with all its analysis and projections arrived at, is utterly remarkable. The most peaceful election since 1994. No contestation of any significant sort by any party of the result. It is really a tribute to the people of this country, Jefferson. But it also communicates the enormous pressure both Parliament and government are, particularly in this portfolio, following those results. The people out there, even where they voted for the majority party, have communicated that it's not just an unconditional vote. It's a very grudging, very conditional vote, actually. And it's signaling that, look, we've had enough. We want you to deliver more. And so it is that some of you would have seen in this Monday and Sunday evening's press and media and whatever, that the majority party is focusing on local government as a key concern at its next NEC. A major summit is being held at local government in July. Some of the issues your committee and the NEA committee have been raising for many, many years, that the financial model for the local government system is very, very debatable. And its premise is questionable because it's based on the view that 95% of the revenue of a municipality is raised through its own sources. Yes, that's true of the pre-1994 era, when the boundaries were smaller, Africans were largely excluded, and they had just a delivery mandate, not a developmental one. Now we have larger boundaries, Africans are included, we have a developmental expanded mandate for local government. So it's very interesting that the majority party is itself, and that's quite important because it's having a conference in December next year, and major guidelines will be provided to government and parliament on how to proceed in that regard, as indeed in respect of the new model we are seeking consensus on, which you heard about through the LGTAS, Local Government Turnaround Strategy. But fundamentally what these elections communicate is that it's crucial for people not just to participate in elections, but actively engage in municipalities through the structures of the ward committees, the IDP forums, budgetary participatory processes, and the like. You see, you can't just vote once every 5 years and fold your arms. Democracy means active community participation as provided for in our constitution. So I think that this has given greater impetus for us to make changes to the model we currently have, which many of us from all parties have been saying is necessary. Obviously, some things we can do now, but in a sensible democracy, the majority party guides the government. It's not the government that stands for election, it's the party. So we look to that majority party's conference next December to guide us in respect of the model. But some of the issues that you are familiar with, that the Minister of COGTA has been saying since late 2009, and these are largely his views that I'm echoing here. And he, by the way, is on sick leave, as you know, and conveys his good wishes, as indeed does the acting minister, Natim Tetwa, who otherwise would have been here, but for the fact that he has a budget of vote to manage this afternoon in the NA. So basically, if you look at where we're going, we're talking about possibly, and we're seeking a model where the capacity of a municipality, its spatial characteristics, its settlement types, its ability to raise its own resources, and so on, will influence the powers and functions it allocated, but from a common list. As a municipality grows in capacity, so it will receive more and more of those powers and functions. The Independent Demarcation Board as well, in any case, does a capacity assessment, which can act as a guide. It will be done by an independent body, so to speak. Secondly, we're talking about a major review of the intergovernmental fiscal relations system. Thirdly, we're talking about an enhanced, refined ward committee system, which is at output 5 of the outcome 9 delivery performance agreement that he reminds me that the minister has secured with the president. The fourth aspect is a review of the powers and functions, you're familiar, as part of making for a more integrated cooperative governance system. Essentially, I'll end there on that note to say to you that if you look at our strategic plan and we look at our budget, you can see how it's seeking increasingly to attune itself to outcome 9, which is in effect the local government turnaround strategy. And I end on this note, that this local government turnaround strategy is a do or die strategy. We have Project Consolidate and the 5-year strategic agenda. People are sick of this acronym. They want delivery, as the masses out there have communicated. And what we are saying is that we need, as parliament, government, civil society out there, to get this local government turnaround strategy accelerated. And we need the role of Parliament. In that regard, Chairperson, it's not for us as government to prescribe, but we would like to suggest that in the second half of the year, that the National Assembly Committee and the NCOP Committee follows up and visits municipalities to see how they're performing on these local government turnaround strategies. On that note, I thank you very much. As explained to the chairperson, I am constantly leave at 10:30. But we will catch up with the notes that the staff is making, and we will come back and report to you in a quarter from now on issues that you've raised with us. Thank you indeed.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for that political input. But before you just leave, I just want to inform you that this committee has adopted a program that this year is going to conduct both reactive and proactive oversight. The committee is going to visit all 9 provinces, each province is taking 2 municipalities, the so-called chronic and the best. And maybe from there we'll be able to engage on what experiences have we let go it for. I just wanted you to have that in mind, that already we have that program. Thank you very much. Then I would allow...
No, Chair, we want to thank the Minister, Deputy Minister, for the input. But Chair, we must indicate that we are going to receive this presentation whilst we'll be unable to compare because we have not received the budget vote. We, in front of us, what we have is the briefing from the department. Now, we have not received the whole book so that we can compare to what the department did or did not do when we ask questions. And that's the point I wanted to raise, that whilst we're going to receive this, we'll be unable to and can ask specific questions because we have not seen the budget all this yet. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. I think the estimates of national expenditure is got a chapter on our budget vote, and that is put on the desk of National Assembly and National Council of Provinces members on the afternoon of the budget speech. That has been the tradition in this parliament since 1994. It's possible that the member didn't get it, but that is not something that we as COFCAP voted before. It's the Secretary of Parliament who was asked why you didn't get your copy. But it's on your desk every year on the date of the budget speech. It's been like that since, I think, the old apartheid order. They have to give it to you. They're obliged to put it on your desk or in your pigeonhole. So that's a matter that the Secretary of Parliament must explain, why you didn't get yours.
Thank you. I think our staff will have to assist us on that to make sure that members do receive that copy. Be that as it may, our debate is on the 8th. I think would allow the department to raise issues. If there are certain issues, we would request maybe one or two just to come and further clarify before the 8th so that we are able to, yes, to engage. I think that would assist a lot. Deputy Minister, I don't know from here to we. Who's leading us is the DG. Thank you very much. You can take over.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. We are quite excited to be here and to present our strategic plan and what is also called the annual performance plan. As I was listening to the Honorable Member now, I want to believe, Honorable Chairperson, that the committee has received our strategic plan. I can see the colleagues and the members shaking their heads because this is really the document that goes into much more detail than vote 3, than what our Deputy Minister has referred to. So that is the first point. The only other second point I want to make, Chairperson, is that with your permission, I would like to ask our Chief Operating Officer in our department. You know, there are lots of new things that we are doing in our department. And the Chief Operating Officer, this is in fact her, one of the core areas of responsibility to drive the strategic plan and the business plan, obviously under my guidance and that of the Ministry. So without getting into anything, we prepared a presentation. It is a high-level presentation, very succinct. And Chairperson, with your permission, we'd like her to do that. And then obviously you will indicate how we're going to divide it down, because I think there's a separate presentation from my sister department here. So I think you can give us guidance in terms of how much time you'd like us to divide between the two. Thank you, Chair.
It might be difficult to be subjective on time. What I may suggest that if you could base your going forward on the basis of
what whether you achieved this or not during the previous day, that will be able to
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The presentation as it is based on the financial year 2011-12 going forward. What we have achieved or not achieved in the past financial year will be presented in the annual report, which is being written as we speak. In terms of the content, we're looking at the purpose, our mandate, the vision, and the mission statement, particularly because during the course of this year when we were preparing the annual performance plan, we did have a look, as we are expected by law, at the five-year plan, and we did review our mission and vision. However, in terms of the purpose, we would like to outline the plan for the Honorable Committee for the current financial year, aligned to the strategic plan, our five-year strategic plan 2009-2014. The primary mandate of this plan is to develop and monitor the implementation of national policy and legislation seeking to transform and strengthen key institutions and mechanisms of governance to fulfill the developmental role. This, Honorable Chair, just emphasizes what the Honorable Deputy Minister outlined in his opening remarks. Also, the promotion of the monitoring mechanisms, systems, and structures that will enable integrated service delivery across government in terms of implementation of government services. Also, the promotion of the sustainable development by providing support to exercising oversight, strengthening the exercising of oversight by provincial government and local government as well. The key thing, Honorable Chair, that we think in terms of what the City Minister was saying would differentiate the current financial year going forward to 2014 is the fact that we would like our local councils, our local government itself, to be able to do oversight actively and proactively. Our vision, therefore, is an integrated, responsive, and highly effective governance system. That is the vision. Our mission statement has got a few parts, and overall it says that we facilitate cooperative governance and support all spheres of government through development and implementation of appropriate policies and regulatory mechanisms, promoting integration and government in the development of government programs, achievement of social cohesion through the creation of enabling mechanisms for communities to participate in governance. This is another distinguishing factor in terms of an increased community participation, so that government does not only hear the conditions of the electorate at the time of elections, but they continue to hear the electorate as government delivers. Monitoring and evaluation of cooperation amongst government stakeholders to achieve improved service delivery is actually the basis, the fundamentals of our mission. In terms of values, Chairperson, we haven't changed much from the values as were presented to this Honorable Committee last time, but we have reworded them in the following manner. The first one being professionalism and integrity, activist approach, goal orientation, participation and collectivism, and innovation and service excellence. In terms of developing this annual performance plan, the annual performance plan is based on the delivery agreement contract that the minister has with the president based on outcome 9. And the strategic plan, therefore, for 2009 and 14 had to be reviewed and updated in order to adopt an outcome-based approach as per the cabinet decisions. The annual performance plan, therefore, was developed out of this review process, and it has been done through a consultative process with relevant stakeholders. This annual performance plan has got the following priorities for the annual for the financial year under review, and these reflected in terms of, if we can go to the next slide, please, Sora. In terms of these strategic goals, to the first one being to strengthen the capacity and capability of the department to deliver on its mandate, we have tried, in order for us to be able to be geared for the outcome approach, to change our strategic objectives so they are measurable, so that the Honorable Chairperson, when you come to see us, you are able to say, you said you will do this to this extent. So you would see, and I will not, with your permission, I will not read out every strategic goal and every strategic objective. I'm therefore just outlining the principal guiding development of these objectives and goals. Also to say that, Honorable Chairperson, if you look at our strategic goals, they match word for word almost the 7 outputs of Outcome 9, as well as other goals that emanate from the local government review report, so that we can cover everything that was pointed to us during that process. Therefore, you overall have a total of 10 strategic goals, and the extended ones, if you can get to almost the last part one, slide on that one. The improvement of access to basic services, the Deputy Minister alluded to that one as well. We have also singled out a strategic goal in terms of the implementation of the Community Works Program, which will ensure the creation of jobs for within our municipalities, and as well as a goal that deals with facilitation of economic development at local government. This particular goal seeks to strengthen local economic development. Honorable Chair, I'm aware that I'm running through the presentation. Please, if I need to go back to any slide, I will do that. The slide that we are looking at now gives a summary of the appropriation for the current, for the financial year under review. The year under review 2011-12, the allocations are highlighted in red in terms of the different programs that the department has. This department, Honorable Chair, has got programs, administration, policy research and knowledge management, governance and intergovernmental relations, disaster response management, provincial and municipal government systems, infrastructure and economic development, and the Department of Traditional Affairs in terms of Treasury is still treated as a program within this. This is why it appears here. Now, in terms of the allocation, the respective allocations per program are written in red: 212.6 million, 46 million, 34.2 million, 821 million, 249, 12.3 million, respectively. Overall, as the Honorable Committee is aware, this department is but part of a Ministry of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. So there is one ministry and two departments. I will therefore, Chairperson, with your permission, pause at this point to allow Traditional Affairs to complete the presentation. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues, Traditional Affairs presentation I will also try and run through the presentation. We are a new department, and what we are going to show is some work that we did that informed our strategic thrust in terms of the medium-term strategic framework, which is up to 2014. So let's go to the next slide. Let's go to the next one. That slide simply indicates the evolution of the department. As it was indicated by my colleague that, we were a program 5, gradually moving into the department with 3 programs. And that happened within the broader context of reconfiguration of government and repositioning of government so that it can accelerate service delivery. Let's go to the next one. That indicates the mandates of the department to ensure that the Institution of Traditional Affairs is transformed and is able to partner with government in the development of communities. And also we have a role to coordinate, these activities. The next slide. That is the establishment of the department. It was intended to be fully functional by 2011. And so far, a number of posts have been filled. We've got an establishment of 128 posts, and 43 have been filled. Many of them have been filled in January this year. As an accounting officer, I was appointed in September, and the 2 DDGs were appointed in August. So a lot of these appointments took place this year. Let's go to the next slide. That is the assessment dashboard. When we started with the department, the first thing that we looked at was to isolate those 9 things which are elements of good governance. And further than that, we then consulted different provinces around those areas, whether there are structures that are established, systems, the budget allocated to support traditional affairs, issues of infrastructure, capacity, partnerships, community engagement and coordination, as well as accountability. We received feedback with regard to that. It was consistent in all the 6 provinces that we've covered. Let's go to the next slide. Now, these are the 8 steps that we've followed. The first step was to come up with a concept document with a methodology on how to assess those 9 things. And then we also identified stakeholders at national level, at provincial level, and also entities. And then we established the provincial task teams. And then there was pre-assessment engagement with the provinces and stakeholders. We received the inputs, and there was the actual assessment itself. And then we also analyzed the results of our assessment and so on. Now, there'll be feedback loop as well. Let's go to the next one. These are the stakeholders, the traditional leaders, contra lesser, mayors, speakers, councillors, SALGA, premiers, MECs, and government officials. Were consulted. The purpose, the goal was to establish baseline information to harmonize, synchronize, improve efficiency, improve effectiveness and accountability. The next slide. And we have indicated that we covered 6 provinces with this work. Now the next slide. What are the concrete steps after the analysis? The findings of the assessment will inform the final provincial reports. Final consolidated report, capacity building strategy, partnership model, strategic plans. This strategic plan for 2011-2014 is informed by that process. Annual performance plans targeted support that will yield high impact, improving monitoring and evaluation and accountability as well. And, the department is called Traditional Affairs, the next slide. Traditional affairs, and we say, what are the affairs? Those are the affairs in the boxes. Heritage, linguistic diversity and multilingualism, culture, value systems, traditions, ethics, spirituality, traditional leadership and communities, governance, development and service delivery, and restorative justice. But we're saying at the center of this, we have pastel there, political, economic, social, technological, environmental and legal environment. That influence that those affairs. Let's go to the next slide. Now, we're also aware that there are key players the functions do overlap. And when we talk about African culture, we are saying the National House of Traditional Leaders must take control. When we talk about African heritage, the National House has got to lead. But, you know, the other players, when we talk culture broadly, the Department of Arts and Culture has got to take a lead. When we talk about language broadly, PENSAL has got to take a lead. So we've done that kind of work. Let's go to the next slide. It's the next one. The vision of the department, as shown there, and they also are showing the core values, and also that's the mission statement. And we hope that when we have done that, we'll then see the impact on traditional communities in terms of service delivery. And so let's go to the next one. We then came up with the three goals. And effective Department of Traditional Affairs, effective governance systems for traditional affairs, sustainable partnerships and collaboration for service delivery. Now those three goals are linked to the 9 elements of good governance that I've just talked about earlier. Let's go to the next one. We then identified 6 objectives. I'll not go through them. We have them on the slides. So those 6 objectives are then aligned to the 3 programs. The 3 programs, which are legislation, policy, and so on. And then the other one is institutional support and coordination. And we also have administration. Let's go to the next one. Now these are the outputs, and also on each financial year up to 2014, you know, the strategic planning process and models, and we're also indicating that on the first year, those are the things that we're going to do. The next slide, you know, it's a continuation of, you know, where we're outlining all those 6 objectives, the rest of the slides. Can we just proceed to the financials so that we can link those to the budget slide? The details are on the presentations themselves. We also got the copies of strategic plans and annual reports as well. The financials is the last slide, which shows the allocations of traditional affairs. That slide there, we're saying the sub-programs there, we have management, head of traditional affairs, 8.8 million in 2011-2012. And then policy and legislation for traditional affairs is 10.1 million. Institutional support and coordination, 11 million. The National House of Traditional Leaders is 20.7 million, it's one of our entities. And then we have CRL RISE, which is the Commission on the Protection of the Rights of Cultural, Religious, and Linguistic Communities. We've got 22 million allocated for that. And then we also have the Commission on the Traditional Disputes and Claims, which has got 10.8 million. All in all, it's about 83.7 million for this financial year. The next year, it will increase to 90.4 million, and in 2013-2014, it will be 96.9 million. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. I'll then allow colleagues to interact with the 2 presentations haphazardly.
Thank you, Chair. I would like first to thank the Department of Corporate Governance to give us this thing, but unfortunately we really didn't have the book. We cannot really engage them on certain issues. All I would like to see is that I hope this time that their strategic plan will, as you have said in the beginning, Honorable Matila also said, we cannot ask them questions on things which they said they're going to do, and because we don't have any proof in front of us. Did they do it? How far is it? What was the problems? Why couldn't they do certain issues on service delivery issues and on certain issues? But for now, I would like my question to go direct to the Department of Traditional Affairs. on page 12, the presenter said that they talk about African culture and African languages. I would like him to give us a clear clarity on what do you mean only the African, are the Khoisan people included there? And how serious are the Khoisan languages being treated in this country? And are the Khoisan people being seen as true Africans in this department? Then I'm going to your pages there. I think it's page 34. No, not the money one. The previous one, but which I've marked them. Yes. On page 24. Strategic objective 3, to ensure that traditional communities and Khoisan communities are empowered by reviewing and developing the national support program for traditional communities. While I'm there, before I put the question to you, I wonder, are you aware of really what's happening in certain provinces concerning remuneration concerning people in the certain provinces? Because there's a certain man who represents the Khoisan in the Northern Cape National Provincial House of Traditional Leaders. Up until now, for more than 18 months, he didn't even receive a cent. The last time when he spoke to the department, to the province, he said no. He was on as a contractor for 2,500 rand a month. He never even received the 2,500 rand a month. Up until now, they struggled to put him on the database for 18 months. Someone that needs to represent the Khoisan people for 18 months. And he attended. He attend the meetings. Now, let me come to my question on page 24. I see your targets is for 2011 is to establish committees for traditional communities, and 2012-13, Khoisan participating in traditional communities and local. I put the question last time to the National House of Traditional Leaders and to the department. In 2009, up until now, maybe there was a feedback because I'm in so many committees, I did not know. If there was a feedback, I would like to have that feedback on black and white concerning why is it a problem that the Khoisan people can be accepted as any other traditional community? Why is that a problem? Why is it in the law that the Khoisan people needs to be accepted? Because there are the first indigenous people in this country. I wonder if there was a feedback, I would like. Then I would like to ask this question again. Why only in 2013 that the Khoisan participating in the traditional communities affairs? Why? Why is the Khoisan also shifting back? Why? Why? What is the problem? That's why I'm asking. And I'm asking these questions because I'm from an area where, in the Northern Cape, where a lot of Khoisan and Kriqua people are. And I know, fortunately, I went to the Kalahari, I know how they're living, I see there's no development for them, I don't hear about things, I don't sum it out of my tongue. I see these things are not happening. And I'm not here to play political or game now. I'm here to speak on behalf of people who need to be recognized and also be empowered as any other South African. This is my plea to the department. And I'm pleading this now for the past 2 years. And please, if there's a problem, we want to know why. The other thing is, yes, I just marked this on page 94. I'll be happy to see the empowerment and the recognition of the traditional leaders of the Khoisan people. And it won't be fair to say because they've got captains, because I'm not going to mention names here. I've spoken to some leaders, and some of them said the Khoisan, the regional leadership will not treat it the same as some other. I said, that's not fair. The Khoisan regional leadership and the Khoisan community is also a traditional community like any other traditional community in South Africa. You cannot differentiate between the Khoisans and the Khoisans, or the Sutus and the Khoisans, or the Zulus. You can't. Then you are creating a problem. Then, in my opinion, that is discrimination. So all I'm pleading with the department
Can we please have something on paper? If it's not yet done, when will it be done? When will the present people be really recognized? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Martina.
Chair, just one little question. I am aware you have indicated that it's a failure in your department, I know. You see, it's a tradition in government that vacancies will stay forever and be there, no? And they are not filled. You know. Maybe give us a sense as to by when, because for your department to be effective and efficient as you're talking, as to by when will these vacancies be filled, you know? Because, I mean, also, maybe if we can also get, because last time, you know, we were told that, you know, even the department itself will make sure that it speed up the process, the whole entire department, of filling all vacancies. Where is the department with that situation? Because some of the programs we're talking about, which are very good, very nice, are impacted too by the non-fulfillment of vacancies. Government, the president has said this is the year of creating jobs. In all presentations, we don't hear anything about it. You know, in terms of this program, there's nothing about creating jobs. I'm not saying filling posts, but what is it that they're going to do in terms of creating jobs? Yeah, Chair. I think that's the list we can go to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any other welcome, Watson? Welcome.
Thank you.
We received an apology.
Yeah, thank you.
Louis? Oh, Honorable Louis. Thank you, Chair.
With to the traditional affairs, Chair, I know it's not them leading, but if we could see in their plans, I'm not sure if it's there, the traditional courts bill has been referred, transferred, delayed, whatever you want to say. I'm not too sure in terms of this the strat plan. If consult, what is the role basically of them in dealing with the role that they need to play? Of course, as they say, they are traditional affairs. So the traditional courts chase issues of what kind of jurisdiction matters that needs to be. To be part of the traditional courts, and even to an extent the establishment of these courts. If we could hear if there is any work that the part that they are playing, and what is that part, and what are the kind of deadlines that would be part of that. To Copter Chair, the perhaps again to the traditional between the two of them, I don't know the council, the traditional council, Chair, the issues of representativity and equity. We would like to see their monitoring plan. I don't know who plays which part in terms of the election and appointment of the traditional councils. And making sure that they do function accordingly, because there are a lot of problems that we do pick in terms of those traditional councils being properly functioning, Chair. Then the other issue, Chair, is in relation to the programs of COCTA, relates to, I hope, Chair, with as part of the turnaround and the review, whatever those documents that are being said, that part of that is that I know that they've been saying this for the past 2 years, that they are now having a directorate on the vulnerable groups. But municipalities, I think the more than two-thirds of the municipalities don't have the indigent policy. And therefore, Chair, the vulnerable groups fall into the cracks as a result of that. Those who can go and protest and perhaps get shot in that in the process can do, but there are those that cannot even go and be part of those protests because they want need wheelchairs, they need people to guide them, to even be, to raise their voice. So one would have hoped that the issue of the indigent police is reflected and is part of the structure, and to see that the department would lead in making sure that that does happen. I don't know which program that handles that. But that also includes issues of equity check. And issues of, I know the corporate governance, I hope they going to, they would be participating with these new municipalities somewhat in the appointment. Why I'm raising this issue quite strongly, Chair, the election and nominations of what structures or municipal structures, so to speak. Because of this department, this program on vulnerable groups not being strong, I hope it now clarified what it wants to achieve. There are targets set for it to achieve in terms of this true reflection. See, one of which I hear women are talking for themselves, but I can tell you from the what I'm seeing now, we've gone down in terms of disabled counselors. Well, that might be political parties, but the departments must create conditions and conducive environments for such to take place. So, hence, I'm raising it: one, the indigenous policy, but two, if there is any plans of monitoring and assisting in the execution of inclusion of vulnerable groups in structures, now that even women are crying that they're outside counselors. I think now this time around, there are developmental structures that municipalities would have to put in place, and I think COPTA is overall responsible to make sure that through this program of the vulnerable groups that happens, let alone the employment and meeting the targets of employment equity. Thank you, Chair.
No, Chair, just a small, because we need to clarify something. I think as this committee, we want to agree that we receive some presentation on the strat plan, no? But we have not received the strat plan itself to date, as I speak to you. As we sit here, when you raised that book, we're seeing it for the first time, some of us. You see, and that is the situation. But you did at some point give us a briefing when you briefed us sometime. And that is the situation. Because, you know, I consulted with my colleagues as to whether they've seen all of them. That is the problem. If we can. But we have now received information from that, yes, it has been tabled, but it is with the NA. It's not with us. You know, we have not, as the NA has. Unfortunately, that is the situation. And that is the reason why it becomes some difficult for us to engage with some of the issues. And I'm just clarifying that situation, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Just before you respond, I just want to, because HOT will be leaving just now, even if the others will remain, but I just want to raise some of these issues so that you go with them. Promotion of a monitoring mechanism. To what extent can this relate to also avoidance of protest, civil liberal protest? I think it's very much important that it will be contextualized that way. And the oversight over the provinces, what does it mean? You do it in Minimax? Or is there anything different from Minimax? What mechanism are you going to have to ensure that the provinces comply? You see, the problem is that as this committee moves around, we make recommendations that the province must do. And if some of those things are not even done, you just see in the media that that is not the like. So Swahili municipality, those were some of the major recommendations that we did. In Swahili, it was an issue of grading. The municipality graded itself from below to 6, which is not according to demarcation recommendation. It's not at par with that. What do we do to harmonize the situation so that council cannot just take a decision and grade itself higher in order to earn high salary? You know, that type of thing. It should be linked to that. When you talk oversight, we are able to from you, we are able to get answers that we made as a recommendation from oversight visit. I think the question of social cohesion is very important. To take the electoral on board, but it must be targeted so that we are able to know as to whether indeed did the department drive this social cohesion. How many quarterly want to see municipality going to the people or monthly or whatever. I think something like that was it should be sort of a target driven. The other issue that I want to I think the colleague have raised the presidential speech, the SON, emphasized job creation. What indeed is a job creation strategy? Not only the filling of posts, do we have a broad strategy of job creation? How many per year? So that by after so many years, we're able to say this department contributed so much to our 5 million that we're talking about. I think that's other things that I need you to do. The question of traditional affairs, we met the House of Traditional Affairs. Of course, they acknowledge that they are a branch. They say they are a branch of the department, but they want to grow. To what extent are you envisaging that, or by when are we going to see a fully fledged department that deals with issues of traditional affairs, issues of benefits, that kind of that. In some provinces, you know, they determine, they have their own provincial legislation. How do we harmonize that? Because if one province is giving them so much and others less and all stop things, it's going to give the department sleepless, you know, challenges. How do we, as we monitor, because it's a provincial legislation, how do we set a standard so that all provinces do their legislation on the basis of the norms and standards that the department set? I think that is critical, because KwaZulu-Natal has got its own legislation, Limpopo has got its own legislation, and in Limpopo, because it was divided in very according to various former Bantu states, one Bantu state gave in Dunas was higher, the other less. It's now a challenge. I think the intervention also might be sought from the department. But I know that they have legislation that controls them. It might be difficult. But I think at the level of interaction, these are some of the issues that you need to raise. Issue for Kwaifan. We met the House of Traditional Leaders. It was a met. I think it needs to be addressed. I can answer more than what my colleagues, I can ask more than what my colleagues have done. The issue of a department, you know, I know you'll be feeling post, but the Fiscal Finance Commission, in one document that we read, raises questions about as to whether the budget will be able to absorb all what we have. How do you deal with what? They also raise a question of the grant utilization. How do you intervene to avoid to make municipalities not to use the grant where they are not supposed to be using? Like grants that are conditional goes to operation instead of going to capital expenditure. How do you plan to prevent that? Because that will assist to move towards Operation Kid Audit 2014, if can be able to do that. I think that's one important thing that The other thing that I've picked is you have Disaster Management Act of 2002. Hey, but during this disaster, we see different signals, different responses. How do you strengthen, your response, or when you start respond? You have seen people's houses getting right into, they're staying in flood area. How do you start a program to make sure that people move out of those flood lines? Because if they're not moving out of that, come another 10 years of flood or whatever, they'll still have the same problem. And your financial strength in terms of disaster, because you are having many problems, will never be enough to respond to that. And your predictability in terms of that, because you have early signs, early warning signals. How do you do that? I know it's a difficult thing to convince people to move out of flood. It's very difficult. Last year, we asked the very same question to say, newspapers predict that Western Cape might experience flood this time. And we said you need to sort of intervene early. Have you ever been able to do something in terms of that? Otherwise, you must make sure that you prepare if it comes. Like during the night, there was near a disaster when floods couldn't touch down. Were you ready? Do you have something to assist up? I know that is difficult situation, but the question of responding to flood is important. The 20 million of the House of Taxpayers, I don't think in terms of the input that they've given us is sufficient. It's not sufficient. In other words, we can't waste a lot of time in speaking on their issue. There are so many. It needs a time wherein maybe there is a serious engagement between the House of Traditional Leaders and the Department and Select Committee to see how can we assist to make sure that we move towards the situation wherein we indeed restore their dignity as they wish. And also, how do we come in and refine the two legislations that tries to restore their dignity? It's very much important. Lastly, which is, may not be part of this, but I would want to get clarity. What is the status of the municipal system amendment bill? Because we read stories. What we know up to now is that the parliament has passed that. But what is the status now? Just for making sure that the honorables understand where we are with that, because it has passed. The newspaper says which is not passed. Where is it now? Thank you very much.
Chairperson, thank you. As we indicated, the DG and myself, two DGs, we unfortunately have a press conference with our acting minister, but we're leaving behind lots of senior officials here. We have the COO from the one department, we have the CFO, and we have the two other DDGs here. Maybe let me just answer the very last question, just to assist. The bill obviously has been processed by both the NA and the NCOP. Currently, the bill is with the president, and the president is busy applying his mind. So we're waiting for the final assent from the president. So that's where it is right now. Thanks. And let me also make a commitment to say, Chairperson, where our colleagues are maybe not able to deal with responses, we can do one of two things or a combination. We can either provide written responses and or, Chairperson, we definitely would avail ourselves for a follow-up discussion. We would prioritize that. So if you can just excuse myself and my colleague. Thank you very much. I'll hand over to the CEO to maybe start. Thanks.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you, DG. Honorable members, the very first question for us, which is for both departments, and I will answer on behalf of the Department of Cooperative Governance, is the question of job creation. Yes, indeed, we are aware that this year is a year of job creation, and therefore, as a department, we have got what we call flagship projects of the minister. Two of them are specifically three of them are specifically for job creation in the following manner. We have got a program, a project called Ward-Based Cooperatives, where young people are being assisted, and we have got an agreement with SANACO with the help of some technical people to assist our people, especially in the deep rural areas, to form cooperatives, and these cooperatives to be empowered to generate some income for themselves. We have realized that if you just form cooperatives and you teach them how to make a business plan and give them a starter fund and you leave them, it doesn't create jobs. So we have made a decision to link our work-based cooperatives to community works-based projects. In other words, in instances where we have got community works project site, we look into the cooperative around. A typical example is that you would have a community works program busy with young people making all sorts of bricks, paving bricks, building bricks. When they do so, they need protective clothing. They need overalls. Now, the cooperative in that ward will be sewing those overalls for them rather than going to town to buy those overalls. So we're making those kind of linkages. It's not easy, but it is taking its place. We do have quite a number of these ward-based cooperatives already formed in the previous financial year. We'll be nurturing them for at least 3 years until they can stand on their own. We also have got a program that is called Adopt a Municipality. It is a project that has not gotten out of ground successfully, but we are very courageous to pursue it further, because this is a project where we speak to big business to adopt municipalities that are suffering, and this big business will be able to then build, work hand in hand with the cooperatives, so that the people who form a cooperative do not stay in the form of a cooperative for the rest of their lives. They will develop and grow into some form of a bigger business for their areas. We already have project plans that were ready from the 1st of April to implement all these. We can share them with the Honorable Committee when you pay us a visit. We've got another project that is called the Clean Cities and Towns. This project has just taken off in the Eastern Cape in the area of Flagstaff, I think, and the minister did go to launch it. When looking at this project of Clean Cities and Towns, we are not only looking at physical cleanliness, we are also looking at environmental cleanliness. In other words, we're looking into the issues of carbon credits, and the department is now in the process of procuring a service provider who will be responsible for assisting municipalities to recycle used material, to recycle their refuse, and make money out of that. I'm sure that honourable members may be aware of the UN agreement about carbon credits and how carbon credits can be claimed in the form of US dollars, in the form of real money. We are going to start with a few municipalities, but we believe that this is one project that is going to develop our people, not only to pick up papers on the road or plastic bottles, but to make use of those plastic bottles to generate income. So that is a very courageous step that we have taken as a department, and we are indeed going to pursue that. In terms of our annual performance plan, the business plan for the current financial year, we do have projects. If you look at slide number 11, the strategic goal to improve municipal financial and administrative capability. This deals with your next question, honourable members. That says how are you going to make sure that grants monies are used appropriately? First of all, the strategic objectives there, the first one deals with the improvement of the audit outcomes of municipalities. That is where your Operation Clean Audit comes in. We have got two executive managers dedicated to coordinate the Operation Clean Audit from the side of the from the head office. We are in a process of making sure that we at least have one expert per province to assist with Operation Clean Audit based on our satellite offices that we are in the process of establishing. We will also, one of the objectives, if you look there, is to ensure effective management of the municipal infrastructure grant. This is the very grant, Honorable Chair, that you were referring to when you said some grants get used for administrative purposes. We found that some municipalities who take this grant and pay salaries instead of patching potholes or doing the work that it is supposed to do. Honorable members, we take it as our responsibility that when Treasury gives money through us to municipalities, we must follow every cent and see what that cent brings. Our minister keeps on saying there has to be a before and after picture. And that is what you're going to be seeing in this current financial year going to 2014. We should make sure that as money gets into a municipality, when you visit there, they should say, before it was like this. But because government has put something here, now it is better. I'm sure that is what you are all working towards. The issue of disaster management, Honorable Chair, I will be the first one to accept, and I'm sure if my principal was here, the DG or even the minister, they would agree with me that has been our weakest link. Disaster management has been our weakest link, and as a result, when we come to discuss with you our annual report, that is the one that shows what we did in the past financial year, you will see what I mean when I'm saying it has been our weakest link. Now, the Director General has been given direct responsibility to revitalize the unit of disaster management. One, we have reassigned some executive managers to dedicate them to disaster management per province. We have also revitalized the entire unit at head office by way of recruiting people who are more able to do this work, especially with respect to risk management rather than disaster management. Because as you're saying, the typical example that you were giving, Honorable Chair, is a typical example of a risk that somebody has to be ready for before it does happen. However, I need to say that as a country, we still need to have a very close relationship with an early warning system that can be municipal or even localized to a point where you are able to say at that area and that area that is what is going to happen. We envisage, Honorable Chair, that through our public participation program, our people will begin to understand together with government when government says, please don't build in this area. If you engage people and you involve them, they will be able to understand why they shouldn't do that. I will be the first one to say it will not happen overnight, but we are prepared to take that on. In terms of employment of vulnerable groups, Honorable Chair, it is true that we don't have an updated indigent register. And this is one, if you've been looking at the papers towards the end of last year, you might have seen an advert towards this work. We're trying to build a system that will enable us to be able to zoom into a ward and be able to identify indigent persons in a ward, because we are wall-to-wall ward basis in this country. That is how we're trying to get to. However, at this present moment, we don't have an effective indigent register yet. We rely to a very great extent on our traditional leaders, especially in the rural areas, to assist with this work of involvement of indigenous persons. As a result, we have got a percentage, I just cannot remember it at the top of my head now, of people from indigent families that needs to be that needs to be incorporated into our ward-based cooperatives. In other words, when we form a cooperative in a ward, the first people that we look at are people from indigent families, and traditional leaders have been very, very, very useful in that respect. The promotion of our monitoring and evaluation system, Honorable Chair, we're very excited to hear what you said at the beginning of this discussion, that the NCOP will be doing proactive oversight as well. I know as a civil servant, it's not very palatable because you're going to catch us with our pants down, but that should happen so that the people of this country can receive what they are supposed to receive. We have adopted a culture that says we must perform when you are not looking at us as though you are looking at us. And through our I may call it a slogan, that local government is everybody's business, we want to be able to open our eyes and ears to listen and hear our people and try to make sure that there is thorough monitoring and evaluation. To that end, Honorable Chair, we have got in all 9 provinces representatives of the Department of Cooperative Governance who are responsible for monitoring projects by way of going to visit and see that indeed a project is being undertaken and that a project gets completed. We have recruited engineers, for an example, to assist us in that regard. We have also taken over engineers from CS Amanje project from DDSA, who will be able, together with our own localized engineers in the provinces, to assist us with that job. With respect to the oversight over provinces, in terms of the constitution, honorable members are aware that provinces have got a duty to exercise oversight over municipalities. The work of DCOG will be to strengthen provinces to do that work. So we complement provinces when we go to provinces. We don't take over from them. We strengthen them where they are weak, and we together with them assist our municipalities. That is the spirit with which we are developing these satellite offices that we call the technical support unit. Honorable Chair, I hope that I have answered all the questions. My principal did assist me with the most difficult question of the status of the Municipal Amendment Bill, and indeed he ably answered that question. The last question, of course, was about, I think I responded to this one, the strengthening of disaster management. It is a process. When we come to discuss our annual report with you, Honorable Chair, we will maybe have time enough to even share ideas with your good self in terms of that. Lastly, honorable members did raise a concern about the fact that they don't have our strategic annual performance plan with them. I apologize for that. However, there might have been a communication breakdown between ourselves and the secretariat, as I am informed that the committee secretary has the copies, and the copies will be given. When I was doing confirmation more than 3 weeks ago, I was under the impression that when they say they have been distributed, it means every member has got that book. Thank you very much, Chairperson. We really appreciate your guidance and leadership.
Thank you very much, Traditional Affairs.
Thanks very much to the Chair and to the members for the issues raised. The first question was with regard to the Khoisan communities. There were a whole range of issues that they raised. And Chair, in response, would like to split the question into two parts. The first part is on the recognition and provision of services to Khoisan communities. The second part of the question is the recognition of Khoisan communities as traditional leaders. Now, in response to the first question, we've always argued, and the minister has said this over and over again, that when government provides services, basic services, they don't do that at the exclusion of Khoisan communities, because Khoisan communities reside with other South African communities in provinces and in municipalities. So they get all the services that are being provided to the rest of the communities in South Africa. What may be different is the degree of the successes of providing those services to communities in provinces and in local areas. On the issues of the
Can we allow her to complete it and come with follow up format? Yes or no?
Sorry, Chair, I never talk about service delivery to the Khoisan people. No, that wasn't my question. My question had was around the recognition and how they've been accepted by this House of Division and about the law. That was my main question. It was not about, I never said the Khoisan people didn't receive services. Okay, thank you.
Can you continue?
On the second part of the question, which is what the member is emphasizing now, maybe the committee, maybe my colleague will emphasize, may be aware that the department is currently engaged in legislative review. And that has been, I think, adopted by Cabinet for public consultation. One of the major reasons for the review of traditional legislation, both national provinces and within the national house, was to provide for the inclusion of Khoisan communities and to recognize them as traditional leaders. This may have taken long to start the project, and one of the key problems that we have experienced in the past is the formation, is the organized formation of Khoisan communities. So what the department did to address this, we then advised the minister, the previous minister advised that we establish the National Khoisan Council. It has assisted us to pull the different groupings from the Khoisan communities together in a recognized structure that we can engage with. I'm not going to say that structure has been successful. It's a very, very difficult. They fight in the meeting when you're trying to deal with their issues. They want to approach issues as the Khoi, as the Sun, as the Nama, as the Khoikhoi, and all of that. When government is trying to organize them as just a group within society, but the issues that the member is raising are being addressed through legislation, and my colleague will emphasize on that. On the issue of the Khoisan person in Northern Cape who has not been paid for 18 months, I will request that we are allowed time to follow up with the province and we provide a written response to the committee at the right time. The second question was with regard to by when do we think we'll be able to fill the cases. So it's a difficult question, and maybe just a polite reminder to the committee that the separate functioning of the Department of Traditional Affairs from the ministry started in EMS in September last year. There was nothing. The structure was still 128 vacancies. But between September and January this year, we had filled 83 positions that were funded at the time. Now, in this current financial year, we've got only a budget of 8 million to fill the vacancies for 2011-12. The reality is that National Treasury is not going to give us more money to fill the 120 or the remaining 75 posts. We have to demonstrate our performance to National Treasury in order for them to recognize us and give us more money. Unfortunately, that's how they function. And all efforts are directed towards ensuring that we give a meaningful contribution in terms of the performance of the department so that we are recognized and we are supported with the necessary monies. The issue of job creation, I must say, we are coordinating. So we are supporting DCOG in terms of the issues that the COO has raised. If we don't have anything that deals with issues of services, of infrastructure, and all of that. The other departments that we are partnering with is those that the DG outlined in the partnership. One of the departments is the Department of Rural Development. In issues of land and the development of land and issues of agriculture within communities. So we don't have a dedicated program of job creation. Maybe as we continue to strengthen our partnerships and undertake work, we will be able to come with a program of our own in future. But for now, we have to be honest, we don't have any. The other question was with regard to the... Okay, my colleague will address all the legislation-related issues. The functioning of the traditional councils was raised as another area of concern. The DG in the presentation indicated that when we started, one of the things that we did was to conduct an assessment of the governance issues within traditional affairs widely. We looked at the functioning, the efficiency and the effectiveness of the national house, of provincial houses, of traditional councils and all of that. And we are beginning to respond to that. We have developed the draft capacity building strategy. And one of the core focus of that strategy will be to look at the organizational capacity of the traditional councils. As we speak, our teams are visiting different provinces to conduct a needs analysis using that strategy on the specific needs that we need to address in each of the provinces, for the provincial houses, for the traditional councils. So the issue is being addressed to ensure that there's efficiency within the houses. On the issue of the national house as a standalone department, the establishment of this Department of Traditional Affairs was intended to do exactly that, to elevate traditional affairs matters generally in the country. There was never an intention to make the national house as a department on its own. We're looking at traditional affairs issues broadly in the country. Now, there are issues that perhaps at the right time we will need to brief the committee on with regard to the functioning of the national house. There are serious concerns, and maybe when you find time to discuss either with the deputy minister or the minister, they'll brief you because we keep them informed about the dysfunctionality within the national house. It's becoming an embarrassment, but we are dealing with that. We have developed the report for our leadership chair, and like I said, at the right time, you can call us to come and share with us. Now, if something is dysfunctional, it makes it difficult for the department to argue for more funding. You have to demonstrate that this is our program, this is what we do, this is the level of success that we have achieved. In the absence of that, no one is going to listen when you argue for more money. And we're dealing with the issue of functionality for now first. The rest of the issues will follow. I think I've covered all the issues. Thanks, sir. My colleague will deal with the other issues.
Chairperson, thank you, and members of the Senate Committee. I'm going to dwell on the issue of legislation. What is government doing to accommodate the recognition of Khoisan people 16 years after the fact in national legislation? I'll take you back in 2003, when we were working on the Traditional Leadership Framework Act. Cabinet took a decision that the Khoisan issues must be dealt with in terms of a separate legislation and not the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act. From 2003, between 2003 and 2007, we did some research on the Khoisan needs, communities, and authority structures. That research work helped us to come up with policy on the recognition of Khoisan. We presented that policy document to Cabinet in February of 2009, and Cabinet took a decision then that there should be no separate legislation dealing with the Khoisan people. Khoisan people are part and parcel of the South African population. They should not be dealt with separately. Dealing with them in a separate legislation was reviving the previous political dispensation stance on coming up with separate legislation for various ethnic groups. So Cabinet advised that the Khoisan people must be part and parcel of traditional communities and traditional leaders. And on the basis of that cabinet decision, we embarked on a process of drafting legislation to do three things. Firstly, to consolidate the Traditional Leadership Framework Act of 2003 and the National House of Traditional Leaders Act of 1997 into one piece of legislation, so that you have one unified piece of legislation dealing with traditional affairs. Secondly, the intention, the instruction from the minister was that we must take that policy of the Khoisan people and then integrate it into the proposed bill dealing with traditional leadership and traditional communities, so that the Khoisan people are factored into the equation in terms of the recognition of the communities, the recognition of their leadership, the recognition of their authority structures into one piece of legislation dealing with traditional leadership. I'm pleased to inform the committee that to date we have completed the National Affairs, the National Traditional Affairs Bill. We have sent a submission to the minister to allow us permission to consult with relevant stakeholders. Amongst the Khoisan people, I think we have identified 53 locations. This is the first time that the Khoisan people are going to be engaged on a legislative matter that includes them overall. This is the first time that this would be done. That's why there will be 53 locations in the entire country where Khoisan people are located, mainly in Western Cape, Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, which one am I? Northern Cape? In the main, yes. These are last week we sent the draft bill, the memorandum explaining the bill, as well as the draft consultation plan for the minister's approval, so that we start in earnest to consult the provinces. The strategy is that we will consult first of all with the provinces, and especially the provincial houses, and concentrate more on the Khoisan people because they have not really participated in these affairs. Yeah, and concentrate on that. We get the inputs. The deadline for submission or for introducing the bill into the parliamentary process is June, but we're given an extension to July. And this consultation process in terms of the revised framework is going to go on until about October. But we are definite that this bill will go into the parliamentary process before the end of this year, so that you have the opportunity to interact with it. This bill integrates now the Khoisan people. Where we have in the definition section, where we say traditional leadership, you know, or traditional community, there is a footnote to say where it includes the Khoisan people, so that we do not separate them, as you are saying. They are part and parcel of traditional leadership structures, part and parcel of traditional leadership communities. And we must also report that from the 14th of May. We sent somebody to New York, an official from us, to represent the department to articulate the needs of the indigenous people of South Africa, the Khoisan people, at the Indigenous People's Forum in New York. And he has reported to me briefly to say that the International Relations Department consolidated all our inputs, and they reported well on the efforts by government to integrate the Khoisan people within the overall constitutional framework of South Africa, and secondly, in meeting the international instruments for the recognition of the indigenous people of South Africa or of the world. So I think we our report was well received. Furthermore, what in this bill, we have created the establishment of the Khoisan Advisory Council.
the COSAN Advisory Council will have the same powers as the Commission on Traditional Leadership Disputes and Claims has currently. What this commission currently does is to receive applications from various traditional communities for recognition of communities, for recognition of leadership. And then they go through a process of vetting who is who in the zoo. And this advisory committee will have the same powers as that commission to say the Khoisan people will come forth, apply, there will be a cutoff date for receipt of applications, and then this committee, advisory committee, will sit down and screen the applications for recognition of Khoisan communities, for recognition of Khoisan leadership. Once they are, you know, that process has been finalized, then they would qualify for membership in the provincial houses of traditional leaders. They will qualify for membership in the national house of traditional leadership. That's what we are doing. And this, in also what is important in this legislation, we are amending the Municipal Structures Act, which resides in our sister department, to include substantive and meaningful participation of traditional leaders and traditional councils in municipal councils. Currently, the traditional leaders or traditional councils have 20% participation, no voting rights. We are wanting to change that so that there is meaningful participation, because currently if you take stock of their participation, it is not meaningful, because they are saying, why should we participate if we don't take votes? Our decisions are peripheral to the decision of municipal councils, but we are seeking to amend Section 81 of the Structures Act to provide for meaningful and substantive participation of traditional leaders in municipal councils. Furthermore, there is the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers Act, and we wrote the Deputy President to provide, to give us permission to amend that act, because it resides in his office, so that we can argue for meaningful benefits for traditional leaders. And the Cerite Commission is now responsible for championing that cause, where we are saying, you know, we must provide for various benefits, tools of trade and other resources for traditional leaders, including the kings that have been recognized in terms of the presidential decision of July 29, 2010, so that, you know, they are part and parcel of when they perform their duties, they have the tools, necessary tools of trade to perform their duties. They qualify for benefits like anybody else who is holding public office. We hope that by May, June next year, we will have the Traditional Affairs Act that will deal with the issues of traditional leadership and traditional affairs in general in this country. That would be a really good achievement, especially for the Khoisan, who, as you know, some of them here, particularly in Western Cape, have taken us to court and said that government is guilty of cultural genocide. Someone said, what are we doing with the language of the Khoisan people? They are saying their land has not been restituted. We are linking up with the Department of Rural Development to make sure that where such requests come to our attention, we pass that message to the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform to make sure that they respond to restitution issues and land needs of the Khoisan people. Our role as Department of Traditional Affairs is also to coordinate other departments to make sure that traditional affairs issues are taken on board seriously. Thank you, Chair. Oh, the Traditional Courts Bill. The Traditional Courts Bill resides with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. Our role is to support the processes towards the promulgation of that bill, because our constituency is traditional leaders. We want traditional leaders to play a meaningful role in the justice system, particularly around restorative justice. Thank you.
Pardon? He's saying his belief, Chair, but it was in the plan. That's what I was asking.
Yeah.
Can I just clarify that? You recall when the DG was presenting, he outlined a number of stakeholders and how we intend to work with them. One of the things that we are going to do in this is to develop a partnership strategy on how all these partners should cooperate and recognize with us, honorable member. If we just do it on a gentleman's approach, the experience is that it has never really worked. You have to have a guiding document that regulates the nature of the partnership. If they continue to, for example, amend their different pieces of legislation where issues of traditional assets are reflected, we have to have a structured approach of how they are going to interact with us, how they are going to consult with our different structures. Thanks, sir.
No, the fact is they don't have it. They're saying they will develop the strategy. That's what I want. That's what we wanted to clarify. Their role in the traditional courts process, and exactly for the reasons that they are justifying their conviction, that they have a role to play, but they didn't plan anything for this period to happen. That's all what we wanted to know, teacher.
We note that. I think it's a serious omission. We will look into that.
Honorable Matil.
Chair, I think we welcome the responses. They sound well and good. But Chair, you know, there's this point around the person in the Northern Cape. I want, if my memory serves me well, in one of the meetings we sat with the unit where they were making a presentation, I think they were with the House of Traditional Leaders. This issue was raised. We got the same response to say they want to go investigate, they'll come back to us. Today is raised again. It's raised again. We're told the same thing. You see? And I'm not sure as to when are they going to get their acts together and make sure that, you know, what they promised this house to do. Because he raised it in the last meeting. And that's the natural fact also. The House of Traditional Leaders also raised this particular matter when he has raised it, when we are in the one of the courtrooms that side. But that is the situation. And unfortunately, the gentleman was not there, I'm not sure, but Madame was there with another person who was assisting to lead. I'm not sure who was else was there, because the department was not, I'm not sure what was happening then, but a presentation was made about the formation of this particular department and what is happening and all that. That's it, 227. I'm just saying, you know, if something has been promised, people must note and go into that just so that they can give us feedback around that situation. Because it's a concern that the same answer is given to us. Okay, thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Kunta and Nancy later.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. I've been partly covered by what Honorable Matila has just said. I just want to mention this thing. If the department wants me to give them the name of the person, I can give them the name and the contact number of that person. The thing is, this is sitting allowance. And he has been fighting with the province for the past 18 months. The last time they said him, he was on the database as a contractor. He never even received that money as a contractor. So there's a lot of questions coming up. Who did receive the money? There's a lot of questions. And I asked him, I said to him, when we meet the department again, I'm going to put the same question to them. So my concern is, thanks for the honest questions, and thanks for what you have done so far as the department. Thanks for bringing the Khoisan people in line with all the traditional leaders and traditional communities. That, in fact, was my biggest concern. The salary of this man is not, but I just mentioned it to you, but you need to investigate it. But the Khoisan people, that's my biggest. And the other thing is, I also wanted, it will be the third time I bring it under the department's intention, is that there is a certain old lady in Uppington teaching a certain Khoisan language. The Department of Social Development in the past gave her a stipend of 400 Rand, 800 Rand, but for the past 12 months she's received nothing. There's a hood structure in her yard. She's teaching the children. Every day, the Khoisan language, a certain language of the Khoisan people, I don't even think she received any cent now. So I'm just bringing those things under your attention. That's what I was saying. There are certain things that really needs to get under your attention. And as a public representative, for me, I'm not representing myself. I'm speaking on behalf of the people of the Northern Cape. I'm from the Northern Cape, and I will always speak on behalf of the Northern Cape. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nessie.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, firstly, I must honestly apologize to this meeting for coming late. I've been going down, up and down there between old and new wings. The venue, I was given a wrong venue. Honestly, I'm worried that I was late. Maybe I've missed some of the things. But what worries me is to learn that there are things that we need to follow up, because I think when they talked about the National House with the department saying it's dysfunctional, I think Chairperson, we need to note that and make a follow up so that we can understand how these things are going and give assistance where possible. Again, when you talk about the Khoisans and the Sands and the whatever, all this, that they are fighting, they are in fighting, then I think we need to make a follow-up and get to understand and assist where necessary, so that these things that Honorable Kunda is raising, we can ensure that there's a way of taking them forward. But Chairperson, there's nothing that frustrates me more than listening to both departments. You know, the luxury of time that they have in what they are talking about here. I'm worried. You know, when, in my experience, when we went out for elections, South Africans don't have the patience that we have here. They don't have it all, and I'm also don't have that patience for any department. I was listening to you, CEO, talking about wall-to-wall ward and then the indigent, and I'm listening to you, and what I'm hearing from the story that you are saying that you are still searching for information to understand indigent people in various words so that services can get to these people. That's what that I'm summarizing what you are saying. I understood clearly, I got you exactly what you are saying, but I'm saying what frustrates me to hear that is that I think we've got 5 years now or four, I think it's the fifth year now, where there were these people which are called the community development workers. And my worry, what they have been doing over these years, if we are still searching for indigent people so that we can put them in these co-ops instead of, because our database should have been full by now, and what we're supposed to be doing now is to deliver, not to collect data. If I got you right, I'm very, very, very worried, and I'm not sure whether you have seen how angry are South Africans out there for the services that they need to access. And the departments are busy developing concepts. I don't think at this age of our democracy, we're supposed to be talking about developing concepts. We're supposed to be improving on that. Not to develop anything now, but we're supposed to be improving, because people want the better life that we're promised. And on this issue of legislation, this side happening on the traditional affairs, I can hear the story, but what worries me, the first, is the fact that we are saying everything is dysfunctional there. Because if the National House is dysfunctional, how then are you moving with these things, with these pieces of legislation? What is their participation? What contribution are they making? Aren't they going to question it later? Because they were not part, because they are dysfunctional. If the Khoisans, they are fighting amongst themselves, then these concepts, all these things that you are saying, you are trying to include them. How do you do that without them? These things, that's a matter of concern to me. As a result, I think, Jefferson, it would be wise for us to get there to these people, the National House, and understand exactly what is being said here, and then the Khoisans, and understand what is being said here, so that we don't come here and sit here and discuss about them and the policies and the pieces of legislation whilst these people, because if you are saying that is functional, then it means they are non-existent. Why do we understand that as a house whilst it's dysfunctional? I'm just worried about that. Jefferson, those are the issues that I've captured out of what has been said here. And really, man, if I got you right, I'm really very, very worried. If I got you right, I'm very, very worried that if the department is still busy collecting data, I don't think you... Thanks very much, Jefferson.
Yeah, thank you, colleagues. The Transport Road was supposed to be receiving another department, and I will allow them to just respond, and then let's take other inputs when we meet them during the annual report.
Sir, thanks for the follow-up questions. Can I once again request that we noted the Northern Cape issue, and we commit that we'll give a response to the committee. On the National House Chair, I've proposed that we have a follow-up meeting with the committee. Just some of the examples. The National House has never had a serving chairperson for the duration of the appointment of that chairperson. Chairpersons and deputies are appointed and then they get unseated. That leads to the dysfunctionality of the House. So what we did last year with the recent unseating of the chairperson and the deputy, we then went on to investigate what could have led to this historical unseating of chairpersons and deputies over the years. And we prepared a report for the minister. And that delayed the appointment of the now serving members. I'm just giving one example of some of the problems within the National House. But as I've indicated, the minister has been briefed. He's well aware of the issues. The deputy minister is well aware of the issues. So it may be advisable to engage them before you engage with the House. But I think the follow-up meeting will be necessary. On the Khoisan communities, what I said earlier is that there was disorganization. We didn't know who to interact with to get a sense of their issues. Hence a decision to appoint the National Khoisan Council, which has assisted. The issues that are being addressed in the legislation will to a large extent address this disorganized formation. Dr. Zander indicated that in the overall consultative process, the large part of the consultation will concentrate on the Khoisan communities because they are quite huge, and to ensure that we cover as many stakeholders within those groupings as possible. And it is hoped that with the establishment of the advisory council once the act is finalized, it will also assist us to deal with some of the challenges of recognition. Thanks.
Honourable Matthias, do you have anything, Benny?
No, Chair. I think she has tried to answer, because the last time we met with the department and the last chairperson of the House, it was indicated to us that, you know, they don't get the necessary support, you know, as their House, and therefore they feel, you know, as general support. That includes secretarial support, because they had to wait for the department to do that. And we thought at some point, some of these dysfunctionalities is part of that particular process. That's what we thought, because they complained to us. And unfortunately, the department was part of that specific meeting when they complained openly. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, there's just one question for us, and maybe just a minor correction for the Honourable Member. When I spoke about the Indigent Register, I said that we don't have an updated Indigent Register. The process that we are engaging in is to update the Indigent Register. An Indigent Register is a piece of document that you will have to revisit every now and then, because people do not become indigent forever. And this is why we are working with the traditional leaders for appointment of people into our community works program. It's not as if we are just collecting that data, we are sitting. Unfortunately, the Honourable Member was not there when I did the presentation, which emphasizes implementation vis-a-vis policy development. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think as a move towards closure, we would have to agree that issues of the House of Traditional Leaders seems to be, in a way, not palatable, precisely because we call them as if we are calling formal structure. Now it's like we're not talking to a formal structure. We're talking to a coup d'etat. And therefore, there will be a need for a very urgent meeting between this committee, the House, and the department. Similar meeting to clarify, because we should not waste time to speak to people who are not legitimate. And therefore must have an urgent meeting so that we're able to put things straight, especially in the light of what we hear. I think the Secretary needs to note that let's get the time, let's call them, because our duty as public representative is to ensure that indeed issues of society are addressed by our department. I think that's very much important. So these other issues that have been raised, I think as we meet for annual report, indeed the report must be able to say we met that time, we're here. In terms of the concerns of the committee 1, 2, 3, we are here. These are difficulties, and these are proposals to address them. I think that this is what the members would want to engage on. Basically today, we just engaged because the department want money so that the committee must approve. And we should not approve for compliance. I think we shouldn't do that. It's not that the people will suffer if we reject your budget. And in the interest of the people, we'll compromise only this year. Next year, you will get it hard. We are not going to just approve. It must be based on really issues that that are in our plan. And then we'll be able to do that. We know there are a lot of issues that we cannot go in. If we had time the whole day to unpack certain issues of your staff department that we hear in corridors and all sorts of things are not raised yet. And yet we're going to meet them. Sometimes we'll read them in the newspaper. It will be embarrassing as if we don't have a robust parliament. You must make it possible for this parliament to work correctly and constitutionally. I think for now, one would say those are the chosen ones. But next time, because sometimes I used to deny members the right to express, because in the interest of complementary relationship. But that's a warning. Next time things must be fine, and must go to details and make sure that we pass budget that we'll be able to speak on. Thank you very much. Thank you. Arrive alive.